Street, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, quote, "A strike of public employees manifests nothing less than an intent on their part to prevent or obstruct the operations of government until their demands are satisfied. Such action, looking toward the paralysis of government by those who have sworn to support it, is unthinkable and intolerable," unquote. FDR summed it up pretty well. His words mean that those who choose government employment become a part of the government establishment and are sworn to uphold it. Their employers are not their immediate superiors or even the elected representatives of the people. Their true employers are the people. No amount of rhetoric or reciting of cliches such as second-class citizen can change the fact that there is a fundamental difference between private and public employment. In the fiscal year that ended in October 1975, some 316,000 government workers at all levels engaged in unauthorized and illegal work stoppages a total of 490 times. They struck for a total of almost 2.5 million workdays in that one year, generally over wages and hours. Tragically, the worst offenders were our teachers, those we trust to implant standards of conduct, concepts of trust and responsibility in tomorrow's citizens. There are almost 10 million full-time state and local employees, and more than half now belong to employee organizations. Some refusing to join such organizations have been forced to contribute dues to the organizations they refuse to join, and the Supreme Court has upheld this coercion. In my own state, the citizens of California have an opportunity to do something about this situation. Disturbed by a change in the law which gave teachers' unions the right to bargain for non-members, professional teachers and other citizens have formed a committee for individual rights. This committee is circulating petitions to put a proposed constitutional amendment on the ballot in 1978. So far, they have attracted an impressive array of endorsements from office holders, chambers of commerce, and other organizations such as the Professional Educators Group, National Association of Professional Educators, and the Professional Educators of Los Angeles. Their proposed amendment would make it, quote, "unlawful for any public employee or any employee organization, directly or indirectly, to induce, instigate, encourage, authorize, ratify, or participate in a strike against any public employer," unquote. The measure continues spelling out what enforcement of this prohibition would entail. Quote, "Any violation by a public employee shall result in mandatory dismissal and in the loss of tenure or seniority, and in the event that such employee has both tenure and seniority, the loss of both," unquote. Anyone dismissed for striking could not be reinstated, but would have to take his or her chances of being rehired as a new employee. The amendment frees each employee from obligation to be represented by an organization as a prerequisite to employment. It also states that dues or fees cannot be imposed as a condition for hiring, nor can there be an assessment of such fees for political purposes. I'll assure you, the National Education Association will come out against this proposal. But I hope my fellow Californians will rally round and help provide the 500,000 signatures needed to put this on the ballot. It is time for the citizenry of all the 50 states to declare that public employees cannot strike. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K-Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
KPRL presents Sound Off, the longest-running radio talk show in San Luis Obispo County. Sound Off on the North County's choice for local talk, KPRL. The views and opinions expressed on Sound Off do not necessarily reflect those of KPRL, its management, staff, or sponsors.
Sound Off on AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Davis Body Shop, your auto collision specialist in Paso Robles and Atascadero.
This is Sound Off, where the North County comes to talk on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome to Friday with Darsha and Kenny. Say hello, Darsha.
Well, hello, Kenny. How are you?
This is the November 14th version of or episode of our show. Got a lot of paper in the stack for today. We're going to start probably answering or taking questions on Paso Robles and the Paso Robles Joint Unified School Districts, since I know that one.
The gift that keeps on giving.
The gift that keeps on giving. Then we're probably going to spend a lot of time talking about Prop 50, some of the politics that's going on. Darsha's got actually a bigger stack of paper than I do. So, Darsha, what are your topics for today?
So I did want to go over some of the local races and what's happening. And there's a really only one question on the ballot, but wanted to talk about what's happening with the statistics and the return that we have coming in as far as I don't have the exact breakdown, Republicans, Democrats, but I do have the numbers, and they're supposed to start additionally counting today with another release of the results. I do have the results from Wednesday, and then I was at the county clerk recorders yesterday observing the 1% manual tally. So I have been getting questions, Kenny, about why am I just now getting the text message saying that my ballot has been counted? So we can go over that perhaps in the next half hour. Say from 1:10 to 1:30. Love to hear from people that their election day experience or whether or not they have received that text message and why I believe that it's misleading.
Excellent.
So, Paso Robles, Unified School District.
I have to put a caveat out front. I know there are probably going to be some questions on the Megan Fletcher situation, and I you can ask your question, but don't get upset with me if I say I can't answer. I can give you some of the background on that. But the bottom line is there were some concerns posted on social media beginning back in June. And, the board and the board president, being the head of the school district, were aware of those social media posts and chose really not to take action at that point.
And just in case, if you haven't been listening on KPRL or reading Cal Coast News, I don't know how many of you would actually read the Tribune unless you're looking for controlled opposition. But in any case, what Kenny is referring to is the principal of the Paso Robles High School was detained.
She was arrested and per the news releases, she was charged with DUI, were the articles that I've read. And I haven't heard anything to the contrary
from the articles was that the reason why it was a DUI, she was not in her vehicle at the time, but that when she reported on campus approximately 9 o'clock in the morning, there were concerns and people were saying that she... And someone reported, and the police came over and did end up arresting her for intoxication. She drove there, so presumably it wasn't 2 hours prior to that, and it was enough that they were thinking that there was some intoxication while she was had been driving.
Correct. And so again, if you all want to call in... 238-5775. I'll answer questions on whatever. But I want to focus for this first segment really on what's going on in the school district right now. On Tuesday night, and I'd encourage people to show up and start attending these board meetings because they're going to start turning into WWF or WWE now? Is it WWE? I'm thinking about getting one of those luchador masks and start wearing one of those to try to make...
it is choreographed, so...
Yeah, that's true. But this coming Tuesday, we're going to be discussing the academic performance in the school district. And I've gone over these numbers with the listeners many times, so I won't go over them again. But the bottom line is our academic performance is pretty dismal. And there was an article that kind of supported what I see is wrong with the state of California education system in general. And it came out yesterday. It was on Fox News this morning as well, but it was a Daily Caller article that came out yesterday. Once prestigious University of California, San Diego now admits students who can't solve first grade math problem. And this is the challenge the state of California has. And a lot of people will say, well, we need more money. No, you don't. You need to establish standards. When you read through this article, it highlights the fact that again, UC San Diego, which is, you know, probably, I would say, in the top three of the UC. Would you agree? I don't know the UC system prestige levels, but UCLA is pretty hard to get into. UC Berkeley, and I would argue that probably UC San Diego is third, maybe fourth. But when you read through this article, it talks about the statistics, and it's pretty troubling when you look at it. And to refresh people's memories, the California education higher education system, the Cal States and the UC systems, did away with the SAT as an entry requirement, I believe, prior to COVID. But when I was taking my son around to look at universities on the East Coast, every one of the schools on the East Coast highlighted that SATs or ACTs are a requirement for entry. Why is that? Well, because it's a standardized test and it establishes a nationwide standard. And when you look at California, and you look specifically at Paso Robles and probably Templeton and Atascadero and Chandon to some degree as well. I don't know them as well, but I can speak for Paso Robles. You have what's called grade inflation. And again, when you have like the class of 2025, where you have a 90%+ graduation rate, but you only have a 17% proficiency rate in math, those kids that you're sending on to college are not going to meet the normal standards to get into a university. And so I was happy reading through this article that people are finally starting to take a look at that, because it's not just a California problem. It's really a nationwide problem to some degree. We've driven a generation or two of children to see university as the check in the block, and the
must go to college.
You have to go to college.
You won't amount to anything.
And as a result, I was listening. I'm a big fan of Mike Rowe, and I was listening to Buck Sexton and Clay. Why can't I ever remember his last name? But Buck and Clay. I was listening to them yesterday, and they were talking about education as well. And again, the shortage of skilled laborers in the United States. The average age of a plumber, the guest said yesterday, was 48. I've heard that the average age of most people in the trades right now is 54. But if I look at it, you know, if I put my military hat back on and I look at it from a national security issue, we do not have the workforce necessary to maintain the industrial might to sustain ourselves in battle.
And I think that was one of the reasons why when Laura Ingraham was interviewing President Trump, I think that was one of the issues that maybe it was taken a little bit out of context as to him saying, hey, you know, right now, We need those H-1B visas. And personally, I want America first and I want Americans first. But I think what he was alluding to is that right now in the last 20 years, we'll say 20 years, that our education system, our standards have been lowered, and that what we have coming through the ranks as coming from the quote-unquote elite schools is not as elite as it used to be. And certainly what we have in California when Paso Robles High School is just a microcosm of that entire picture.
Right.
So I want to see where Americans are filling those jobs. And I think for that gap, we can get there quickly. But it has to be something that is a national goal, or you know, a mission. I think it's even stronger than that. It's critical.
Yeah, you mentioned it, but the topic yesterday when I was focused on the skilled labor force in the nation, it was the H-1B. And they had callers coming in talking about the H-1B visas. And this discussion stemmed from Trump's interview with Laura Ingraham. Mm-hmm. And Trump made the comment that we don't have that skilled labor. the specialty labor required to fill some of these jobs. And that's probably true at some of the higher levels. But I side with you, and I think both Buck and
Clay.
I blank him for some reason. I side with you on this. You know, the emphasis needs to be on our country and educating our youth, not only to have a skilled workforce, but also having a workforce that's loyal to the United States and shares the same belief and loyalty to the Constitution of the United States.
And when my sons were looking at college and going to college, it was predominantly international students that were in the UC school system.
Right.
So they're willing and able to pay the out-of-state tuition, and so it's a money game. So the colleges are saying, oh, yes, well, we have to admit at least, you know, some percentage of international students so that we can continue to fund the whole charade. And, you know, those are the students that are there, and it's all about getting that undergraduate degree and then doing the graduate study programs and the PhDs. So then you have the whole pipeline is being filtered with foreign nationals, sons, daughters of foreign nationals, and what do we have left? So
yeah.
It starts from the very beginning, just like The Sound of Music, I guess. ABCs.
Well, going back to this UC San Diego article, it said that 1 in 4 students could not meet middle school standards, and that was a 30-fold increase. I don't see the date. That was from above.
It
was a 34-fold increase since the 1910 era. And then 1 in 8 could not meet English standards, English language arts standards. So it is concerning, and it's all interconnected. I mean, I think the education is the most important thing we can give our kids right now. We're failing. We're not doing it.
And it can actually turn around the fastest. I remember going in and observing a kindergarten classroom where at the very beginning of the class time, there were 6 other first language students in my older son's classroom. And by the end of the year, between kindergarten and first grade, they were all reading, learning, speaking, reading English, perfectly conversive, and maybe they didn't have the same vocabulary, but at the same time, it can be done very quickly, and it can start turning around very quickly. When you were teaching, I taught college level. I taught at Westmont, but I taught college level accounting and economics. What age group were you teaching when they were coming through Monterey?
Well, when I was at Naval Post, when I was at Naval Postgraduate School, I was teaching officers. So, mm-hmm. I mean, these are professionals already. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a professional school.
Mm-hmm.
But after I retired, I taught down in Santa Maria at the Santa Barbara Community College, and I taught American history. I taught, holy cow, I can't remember what else. I taught...
the Constitution?
Well,
did you cover the Constitution?
I did cover the Constitution. I taught a business course, and the name escapes me, but it was basically business policies, and then I taught a security course, basically an overview of all the different national security entities. And so when I taught the history, that was mostly kids that were right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
When I taught the security course, that was primarily targeting the more professional, older students that were going through the police academy at Lompoc. And so the degree of professionalism and interest varied widely. But when I was teaching the 19-year-olds, it was very frustrating. So
I had great students, but again, it's because they were out of class in a classroom where they wanted to be there. They were paying attention and we were engaging. So I want to see us turn that around.
Yep.
Paso Robles Joint Unified School District. Here we go.
All right. We'll be right back.
Davis Body Shop, we receive many letters and emails and pay attention to what our customers have to say about our service. We realize that it's a stressful time after an accident, so our emphasis at Davis Body Shop is not only on the repair of your vehicle, but on the service and attention we provide from the minute you work with our professional staff. Here's what Adrienne had to say.
I found Davis Body Shop and Eric in particular to be very helpful and professional. They kept me informed throughout the process, through emails and phone calls, and went above and beyond what they said they would do. They also were very quick and had my car back to me ahead of schedule. I'm very pleased with the whole experience. Thank you, Davis Body Shop.
Davis Body Shop, the auto collision specialist that you can trust on El Camino Real in Atascadero, with a convenient enterprise car rental facility on site. And Davis Body Shop at Paso Robles Chevrolet.
Let's be honest, everyone hates putting up Christmas lights. So why not just skip it this year? The truth is, it's not about the lights. It's about creating the memories. It's about seeing the kids' faces light up and not spending all day hanging up lights. I'm Aaron King, the owner of Slow Holiday Lights. We handle everything you need to make this holiday season the most memorable yet. We design, install, maintain, and store the beautiful Christmas lights so you don't have to lift a finger. No ladders to fall off of, no tangled lights to mess with, no stress, period. Look us up at slowholidaylights.com.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
We're back. We'll talk over the music because we got a lot of stuff to cover still.
Kenny and Darsha here on a beautiful Friday. Thank you for the rain. Beautiful day.
Yeah, I got 15 acres of barley planted just before the rain yesterday.
So laying the foundation for that planting, we want to see our children be able to learn and grow as well. And so, Kenny, you know, when you have colleges that are having to admit students that maybe literally are saying 2 + 2 = 5. How do we get to a place where here at our local school district, and I'm speaking for Paso Robles, Templeton, Atascadero, the ones within our KPRL listenership, how can we make the biggest impact, and how can parents and grandparents get involved so that this becomes something where we can turn this around?
Well, I think the focus, we need to shift the focus back to the basics, back to academics. And there was a great article that I pulled earlier this week from the, I think it was from Columbia University School of Education, Health and Psychology. And it's by Alex Jordan and Ben Lovett, and the title is "Schools Are Accommodating Student Anxiety and Making It Worse." And we, as you know, somewhere along the line, the education system in the United States stopped focusing on reading, writing, arithmetic, and citizenship, and even science, because we all know that there are however many, 97 genders or whatever now. So we've stopped focusing on that, and we've started focusing on this social-emotional learning. And I'm just going to read one quick paragraph from this. And it starts out, it says, Jacob is terrified of oral reports he's expected to give in his 10th grade history class this school year. The therapist's note recommends he be excused, and the school agrees. The scenario is playing out nationwide. The individuals and institutions involved are well-intentioned in trying to help students feel more comfortable. But the psychologists who've studied and treated anxiety for decades, we believe that this approach, eliminating whatever makes students nervous, is making the problem worse. They're absolutely right. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, if I couldn't do something, I was taught to keep trying until you could do it. And what we're doing now as a society is, oh, if you're afraid to give your little, if you're afraid to give your report, we'll go to the taxpayer-funded wellness room and let you have a timeout. You can sit in a beanbag chair. We'll give you stuffed animals. And this is stuff the taxpayers are paying for. This is what Measure M spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in constructing wellness rooms. We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on having psychologists and stuff like this. We are teaching a generation how to not strengthen themselves and face their fears. What we're doing is teaching them to suck their thumb and curl up in the fetal position, in my opinion.
I think the quote I know is courage is not the absence of fear, but the conquest of it.
Right. Great quote. But you know, this is just one of the challenges we face in the school district. I got another article I want to bring up in my last few minutes before we shift focus here, but this was an op-ed piece that was written by Jim Cogan and Joel Peterson, who are on the board with me. And it says, misinformation hurts our schools and wastes taxpayer dollars. And this was on November 6th. And I'm gonna write a rebuttal to this, but because even though they don't mention my name.
This is Cal Coast News.
Paso Robles Daily. And the first paragraph basically says, recently, one of our colleagues on the Paso Robles Joint Unified School District Board of Trustees has engaged in fear-mongering and misinformation to scare parents into worrying about the safety of their daughters in Paso's schools. In an effort to win personal political points, he is bringing a national debate over the rights of transgender students into the board meetings, all the time inventing a problem and promising solutions that he knows are not possible. So what this is about is my repeated efforts to basically get us as a board to address not necessarily the rights of the transgenders, but really the violation of the rights of girls under Title IX. They've spun this. And up until Trump came into office and up until his initial executive order back in January, I reluctantly went along with the fact that you had boys in the girls' bathroom because there was no legal predicate to fight it as a district. You had lawsuits around the state that were taking place, and the school districts in the state were losing those. One of those is ongoing, and that's the Mirabelli and Olson case in Escondido. That's now a class action lawsuit. So if there are any teachers listening who were threatened with disciplinary action for not using preferred pronouns, or if there were any parents whose kids were trans behind their back, you can join these suits. But, you know, I'd like to cover just another 2 minutes on this because these guys are completely out to lunch, and they talk about fiduciary responsibility and following federal law. I'll leave the listeners with this. If we're following federal law, why is the U.S. government suing the state of California for doing what we're doing? That's the question that I would pose to everybody. And Jim Cogan, if you're listening, or Joel Peterson, you listening, call on in and let us know.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.